Jaguars Today starts right now.
Handoff, Taylor running outside. He's got room 25, turns inside 20, on his feet 15. Here he goes to the 5, touchdown, Fred Taylor. 25 yards and the Jaguars are on the board. Mark takes the snap, drops to throw, pocket collapses, sets up the screen. Taylor's got it with room. Taylor's at the 15, Taylor's at the 10. Taylor goes to the 5, touchdown, Fred Taylor. 16 yards on the screen pass, and the Jaguars take their first lead of the night, 13-10. Here's a handoff to Fred, running to the left, looking for room. He is into the end zone. Touchdown, Jacksonville. That's 3 touchdowns tonight for Taylor, and the Jaguars lead 26-10. They're piling it on the Steelers here at Three River Stadium. Mark under center, gives the ball to Fred, running to the left, cutting it back. He's at the 25, he's at the 20. Fred coming outside at the 15. Fred's at the 10, 5, touchdown, Fred Taylor, his 4th touchdown of the night.
Wow, he's wearing out that corner of the end zone, that's for sure.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and David Garrard.
All right, welcome in. Jaguars Today kicking off right now. I had a feeling we would hear that open at some point this week. Freddie T.
I got a feeling I know what tomorrow's might be.
I have a feeling.
I was a little bit surprised it wasn't today's, Dave, but I have a feeling I know what tomorrow's open.
We may be going in chronological order, though.
We might be. You know, fine.
We had the Chris Hudson yesterday.
We did.
Freddie T today. And any other significant Jaguar-Steeler matchups in history?
I don't know.
I'll just scratch my head.
David, do you remember any big games against the Steelers?
Can't think off the top of my head.
We'll dwell on that. Yesterday, you may not have a reason to do this, but yesterday we asked people what was their favorite reason to hate the Pittsburgh Steelers, because they're eminently hateable. Do you feel that way? I mean, you probably have a lot of reasons to thank the Steelers. Not that they allowed you, not that they gave you anything, but it was your performances in the 2007 season against Pittsburgh that gave the Jags their last playoff victory, in part, along with your teammates, obviously, earned you the contract and, you know, basically cemented you for the foreseeable future as a starter here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, the thing that I don't like but respect them is not really the on-the-field thing, is how their fans travel. I mean, we would have home games here, and it didn't matter who scored the touchdown. It was rocking and rolling. So if the Steelers scored, you couldn't tell. You felt like you were at a away game. But then when we scored, so the way their fans travel, I respect that, but then I hate them all at the same time because they're everywhere. Anybody you talk to is like kind of a closet Steelers fan, and but you know they get a lot of respect for that because of winning 4 Super Bowls, you know, in a span
of 6 years. Yeah. Now, you could, some of them probably do travel, but a lot of them fled Pittsburgh, and they're now, well, they, it's true. I mean, you know, a lot of that industry shut down, and they got the heck out of Dodge, yep, and they took their allegiance with them. So that's why they're scattered, kind of the 4 winds of the United States, and but they do show up in numbers and pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, and to go back to what we were talking about earlier, talking about 1 week, if Bill Belichick didn't sum that all up,
oh my goodness,
with about 3 or 4 words, we're on to the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, but you know what, Bill, I get it, and that's what you, the idea, and for Belichick, there's probably nothing that is to be gained by talking about anything more of what came out of that game against Kansas City. But it's just the smugness, the,
yeah,
I don't need to, you know.
Everybody hates it.
It's Belichick, and no coach wants to go back. And that's kind of the 24-hour rule that we all talk about in the National Football League. And from that standpoint, I get it, because you get a chance to talk to him after the game, if you're covering the team, about what went on in that game. And unless some new information develops, I don't know what's to be gained a couple of days later from going back over it. But that's an interesting situation going on up there right now.
It really is. You know, it's almost hard to believe that they have fallen the way they have. And even though they're still, you know, tied for the lead in their division, it's still, it's just tough to see. I mean, when you watch that Monday night game and you see them just get throttled the way that they did, and you see Tom Brady not have any time, you see him not really have many guys to throw to, and you see him getting harassed, and then you see him on the bench. I mean, those are things that you haven't seen in the last, you know, decade.
You look, though, at the weapons they has, and I get it, you know, you say, well, there's no true deep threat there to stretch a field. Well, there wasn't last year.
Yeah.
Okay. Edelman was their leading receiver last year. You had Gronk. You have Gronk at this point in the season. He wasn't even playing last year at this time, right? Amendola's a non-factor. Dobson and Tompkins have been non-factors.
It's
for
not even
part.
Those guys. It's his offensive line.
That's what it, that's what I'm saying. Cause all the skill things really haven't changed since last year. And they went to the AFC title game. So it's gotta be the protection and maybe the play of Brady himself.
And the defense too. But it's really the offensive line because he doesn't have nearly the time to get the ball to those guys who aren't the best crop of receivers and running backs, but Brady is so good when he has the time that if he can, you know, step into his throws and he's not worried about getting plastered in his back, then he can make those throws. But when he is hurried and he doesn't feel comfortable in that pocket, then he can't be nearly as accurate as he wants to be because he's always thinking in the back of his mind he's going to get hit.
Did you hear Rodney Harrison's comments or see Rodney Harrison's comments
I
about
didn't.
That? He said he Brady looked like he's scared to death in the pocket. That's what Rodney Harrison, a former teammate, said. Now, and Harrison is a guy that I appreciate. I don't always like him, but I appreciate that he puts it out there, you know, what he feels, and has never had a problem being direct even about his former teammates. Can that be possible? Can a guy who's had that much success start looking over his shoulder when the protection breaks down? Because you look at the quarterback here. Maybe he's too young to know better, right? But Blake in the pocket, the one thing we've looked at all summer long since he's gotten here is, boy, if he can throw it at all, he certainly has the head that doesn't look at the rush. It's always looking downfield.
And that's the thing. Tom has played for so long. He's had the ability to stand in the pocket at times, and we would always say he just bakes a cake back there. And now that he does not have that time, he's thinking about it. And if you get hit enough, it doesn't matter who you are as a person. If you start getting hit and you get hit too many times, you're going to feel guys there that aren't really there, and you're seeing it for the first time. And so it's showing everybody that he is human. You gotta have protection. When everybody talks about a quarterback not being able to perform, if you don't have the time to perform, then you're gonna look subpar, and he's a living proof of that right now.
Let's talk about the quarterback here. Blake Bortles made his starting debut. We talked last week a lot about what he could anticipate as a first-time starter in the National Football League. What'd you make of his performance?
I thought it was great, especially coming out of the box. You know, that's when you're usually your most nervous. And he just came out just dealing the ball. He looked really good, going toe for toe with the Chargers. Just the way the ball came out of his hands. I thought some of the plays that they ran were really cool. You saw how they were trying to move him a little bit. Everything that you want to do for a young guy that's behind an offensive line that is not that great. Keep him on the run, get the ball out of his hands fast. And I think a lot of the plays he was probably running the same that Chad was running, but he just operates so much faster than Chad does, you know, and where Chad needs that pocket, he doesn't always need the pocket. He can move and still be accurate. You saw the play to Hearns, the deep ball. For them both to be young guys, to be on the same page there, I'm not sure if Hearns had the double move there where he came in on a dig route but then turned it up when the safety came down. It almost looked like they both adjusted to that. I mean, that is pretty impressive. You would like to see Hearns stay up and catch the ball and catch it on the first time. You don't get two catches for that, you know, and stay up. But
at least he caught it.
At least he caught it. Absolutely.
And they were able to punch it in, so it was no big,
but,
no harm
but
done.
But you saw Blake get out of the pocket a little bit, slide to his left, and still make that throw, keeping his eyes on the field. Those are some of the things that we're going to be able to look forward to for the next 10 years, hopefully.
And he does keep his eyes, you know, on what's happening, you know, in terms of the receivers. And that's one thing Allen Robinson talked with me about last week was that, you know, with this guy, you got to be aware that the play's not dead.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to constantly keep that open. I imagine your receivers had to be the same way for you in that situation. But only 3 passing attempts beyond 15 yards last week. And I obviously that will grow in time. Do you want to see some more designed shots down the field, maybe where the primary look is that, to continue to soften things up? Because the running game showed a bit of a spark, but I think people are – comparing it so much to the complete lack of anything in the first 3 weeks that we're almost saying, okay, know, there was an occasional 9 yard run mixed in here, you know, not enough yet.
Last week I told you guys the running game would be better, and it was, but it wasn't that much better, but it was better because
step in the right direction.
Yeah, he stretches the field for the defensive line. They have to honor his legs. You do want to see some shots, and they're going to have to design shots. They don't have the guy that you can just throw the fade route on the outside where he's manned up with somebody and he's going to jump over the guy. You know, we don't have those kind
of
guys.
Can Robinson be that guy?
He can, but he's so young right now. I mean, you can try it a few times and you're going to have probably more negative or no play there itself than him going up and making that big play. But you got to try it. You got to throw it so that he can get the feel for it, that maybe this time I know what I did last time. And Blake is going through those same things where, you know, he the interception that he had throwing the ball to Cecil, it was partly his fault, too, because he's looking to the right or left. I can't remember. He's looking right. And then he comes and scans all the way backside where Cecil had just been standing there. He ran like a 6 yard hitch route, basically. And those have to be out right now. He didn't help the quarterback out by coming back to it, and I guess that's where he was injured.
Right.
Yeah. But still, that's a ball that as soon as his head turns around, the ball should be on me. And that's where Blake, you know, feels like, man, I can still gun this in there. I got a strong enough arm. And you can't because the DBs are fast. And they know that when that receiver stops his route, that I'm jumping it. I don't care. And if you're late with it, then it just makes it an easy pick for him, and you saw what happened there. But you have to make those throws to your receivers to at least give them an idea for moving forward in their careers, because they're all young besides Cecil, but he can't stay on the field. So they're all young, so you gotta take those shots so they can get that feel to be able to move forward and say, you know what? I know what to do next time, and I'm going to make it for you.
Yeah, and if the play works, the next time he throws it, you're like, I know how to do this.
Exactly.
Like, they have to learn how to do that successfully, too, and to be put in a position where they can, you have to give them that opportunity.
Yeah.
And it does feel like Blake is willing to. I mean, they didn't go downfield a whole lot against San Diego, but that second half against Indianapolis, he had to throw into the end zone to Cecil Shorts. He had to throw down the sideline to Allen Robinson. I think when he gets one-on-one down the field, he's going to take his chances, which is going to give these guys an opportunity to grow into this offense. I mean, they're all learning how to walk, basically, at an NFL level right now. It's just all happening together on the offensive side.
Even the deep passes he threw in the Indy game that were picked off, he's still making those throws to learn next time I'm going to have to put the ball outside from a receiver so that he can go and get it as opposed to leaving it inside for him.
By the way, if Cecil heard you, you just declared he's no longer young. just because he's older relative to these, he's still a young guy. No question about it. Today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight question of the day, asking you, who is the most obscure Jaguar whose jersey you ever owned? And if you tweet us a photo of you with the jersey or in the jersey or posted on the Facebook page, you'll be in the running for a pair of tickets to this Sunday's game between Jacksonville and Pittsburgh. That's right. We'll give away another pair of tickets. Gave one away yesterday. We'll do it again today. So tweet us at MD_1010XL, at DavidGerard9, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. And basically, you can tell us who it is. If you don't have a photo, that's fine. Participate in that as well. Or if you send us a picture of you in the jersey or with the jersey, you'll go into the drawing for the tickets for this Sunday's game coming up. 641-1010 is the number if you'd like to get on board and talk Jaguar football with David Garrard. We'll hear from Blake Bortles today. We'll hear from Jed Fish, a Jaguars offensive coordinator, just as we get rolling here in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, here we go on a Thursday. Red Hot Chili Peppers, Higher Ground. Red Hot Chili Peppers. This is something red hot. Are we talking about Madison Bumgarner
and
the San
favorite
Francisco
candy.
Giants?
No, it's not my favorite candy.
Red Hot.
I think you're going to need more than one song to get it.
All right. Are
just
Red
Hot
anyone's favorite
candy?
I'm sure
there's somebody's favorite candy.
Not mine.
Sour Patch Kids for me.
Okay.
I don't like to sweat while I'm eating candy.
I don't know if I
those
have
tank tops don't provide sweat
favorite.
Protection.
Yeah, they don't.
There have to be different
categories. You ever
categories.
Accidentally get one of those atomic warheads?
No.
No.
Know what you were getting yourself into? Oh, that's a moment in time.
When there's fire flaming off of it, I know
they're
to
like
stay
wild
away.
Card, right? You're talking about the ones that are like the size of a nickel?
Yeah.
Kind of, and the rock. How do you accidentally get in a tongue?
It was in a bowl full of candy. It was just all out.
I thought it might be a sour ball or something.
Right. And so I popped it. I was like, oh, no. This is bad news.
Does Halloween
be
scare you?
Categories. Does Halloween scare you, Tony?
No.
Because you might accidentally get an atomic bomb?
Oh, no. Those are usually labeled there for that. This was at, a party where they just had everything out of the bag.
They took all
a
the
bowl.
Candy. Oh, wow.
What kind of parties are you going to?
Right. It was, well, my friends would do something like that because they'd like to see somebody accidentally put an atomic bomb.
Those are not friends.
They would enjoy that kind of thing, and
no, they are.
They did.
They're guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty commonplace.
Know all about it,
good
actually.
To know. Don't attend Tony's random candy parties.
Fat Tony's random candy party.
Stick to the keg. Got
that
it.
Sounds
that's
creepy.
That's a very tame prank.
I do see a question of the day for later on in the month with Halloween approaching.
Yeah.
Though, right? Like, such as, what is the worst edible thing you can get in your Halloween bag?
What is the worst thing that you've got in your Halloween
bag? The worst thing? Yeah. I've told the story for many years. It's the lovely Mrs. Baton, God rest her soul, in Milford, Connecticut.
You remember the name and everything.
I mean, she lived right across the street from us, man. She one year gave out caramel apples. But they weren't wrapped in anything. They were just they were on the tray on a sheet of wax paper.
So you had to carry it around.
So you just carried it around, stuck it in the bag, threw it in the yard. What are you going to do with this? I'm not going to eat a caramel apple right this second.
That is hilarious.
I've never been a fan of the caramel apple anyway, because, you know, the caramel is always delicious.
Mm-hmm.
But the apple, you just don't know what you're going to get, right? It's going to be a soft one. That's going to ruin it for everybody. That's just terrible.
I like caramel apples.
You know, by the way, our early leader in the clubhouse, anything wax, right? Like those wax bottles and, you know, with the little juice inside of it.
Oh, yeah, I do.
The worst thing ever.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. They had a lot of extra wax lying around. Hey, check this out. We'll package it up, put pretty colors on it. Kids will buy this. It's fantastic. All right. Wish we had done that today at this point in time. Since we're kind of off the subject right now, let's get the David Garrard movie review of The Equalizer.
Loved it.
Better than Training Day, you told
me. Loved it. Denzel Washington, how you can make this guy an assassin or whatever you want to call him, a guy. He doesn't even
an equalizer.
He doesn't use a gun at all. You know, it's all hand combat or whatever he can find, like a MacGyver type killer.
Nice.
But it was really good. I loved it. Loved every moment of it.
All right.
So he never picked up a gun. It's not like The Rundown where The Rock didn't have a gun the entire movie, but you kept waiting for that moment when he actually had to pick up a gun, and when he did, it was amazing.
Yeah, no. I kept thinking.
I've never even heard of that.
I kept thinking he was going to have a gun.
It's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
It is. It's a really funny action movie.
All right.
I mean, there was a point where there's 10 bad guys with machine guns in basically a Costco, and he never uses a gun to kill any of them.
Did you see the remake of Old Boy?
No.
You see the one?
I didn't see the new one, no.
Oh, you didn't see the new one?
No.
You want to talk about
I love the old one so much.
The extended action sequence of one guy fighting a horde of people.
They did the hammer scene?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was way over the top, though. Right? Way over the top. So it wasn't, you know, no guns.
Was it like the Tarantino with all the fake blood everywhere?
Yeah, I mean, it was just the amount of bad guys who are supposedly like martial arts experts who are falling one by one or two by six by ten. I mean, they're just piles of them.
To a man with his hammer.
Laying around, yes. I was disappointed, by the way, in that remake.
That's what I've heard, which is why I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Like I said, I love the original Old Boy.
It was good. You ever heard of that?
No.
Disturbing.
It's a freaky, deaky kind of
it's a revenge movie.
Okay. Yeah, it's definitely a revenge movie. It's a crazy, one of the great twists that you'll ever see at the end of it. But I won't spoil it for you because I'm sure you'll run right out.
Yeah, I might have to check it out.
Where would you run out and get that these days, Tony?
It's the old one.
It's on Netflix.
Is the old one is? Or
yeah,
the new, really?
It's streaming on Netflix, yeah.
Oh, there it is.
Well, there you go. All right, 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board and talk about Jaguar football, or apparently it's kind of grab bag day on the start of things today. Let's go to Ivy first up today on the line. Hi, Ivy. How are you?
Hey, Greg. Good morning. How are you guys?
What's up, bud?
Oh, not too much. I just had some thoughts about the Jags, more specifically the quarterback and DB's position and some cuts that have been made.
All right, go ahead.
Anyway, I was going to express a couple of thoughts and then hang up and let you guys, you know, take it off the air from there and listen to your thoughts on it.
You're all set up to go. Here we go.
Thank you. Okay. I'd like to open also by saying what a fan I am of David Garrard and how nice it is to hear him on the air.
Thanks,
anyway, I was just thinking that how much Bortles reminds me of Garrard in a lot of ways, just in terms of athletic ability and making sound decisions under pressure, particularly for a rookie. And I think that he will be the future of our program. As far as DBs go, I think that we have a problem at the free safety position. And it seems to me like letting Winston Guy go may have been a big mistake, because I think that Winston Guy is actually more of a strong safety, and that maybe they were trying to fit a square peg into a round hole there. So my question, I guess, is who would be the backup to Cyprian if he gets hurt now? And then by the same token, at free safety, and I'm a Gators fan also, but Josh Evans just doesn't seem to be, I don't think, a first-class free safety in this league. And now that we've let go, I think letting go Daryl Smith was a bad move, and letting go of Derek Cox was a bad move.
I got to jump in. You're all over the place here. Let's focus on the safety position, Dave, and go from there. The reporters around here love it when I reference Logman, but when he watched the film this week, he said he thought Josh Evans played pretty well again. He started last week for Cyprian, obviously, and, Tony and I watching the game were like, it looks like he's in a pretty good position making plays. The film seemed to back that up. Is he a first class? Is he Earl Thomas? No, but okay. He's the best you got right now. I mean, the thing with Winston Guy, he's so bad in coverage, and he wasn't brought here to be a strong safety. And I get it. He is more of a strong safety by trade. He's on the field for one play, gave up a 43-yard touchdown. That's a pretty bad ratio, okay? And he did it, Dave, because he made another mental mistake. He gets caught looking in the wrong place and not covering his responsibilities.
And that's what you look for as an offense. That's what you look for as a quarterback, especially safeties that don't cover well. How can we get them matched up on a guy that we know can beat them easily? Bob Sanders was another guy. Big hitter, defensive player of the year. But we knew if we could get him covering somebody, we knew we had the advantage. And on that play, you can see Eddie Royal go towards an out route, and you see a guy just trying to undercut, like he's going to get the pick, I got this. And then Royal turns up and catches it down the field. The thing that would have helped Guy out is if there were some pressure on the quarterback at that time to make him maybe have to get the ball out early. Maybe he's rushed. The defensive line and the secondary go hand in hand. Now, there's not going to be all the times where you're having great pressure on the quarterback, but when you can make, just like Tom Brady, when you can make the quarterback think that there's somebody there, they're going to be a little bit less accurate. And if they feel like they have all day to stand back there and throw the ball, man, their confidence is through the roof. They feel like they can make every throw. And then when your secondary is not that great, they really make you look like it, especially when you have Keenan Allen and Malcolm Floyd. I mean, Antonio Gates, you got to get some pressure on the quarterback. And Big Ben is going to come here, and he's going to do the same things with Antonio Brown.
Sure.
I mean, that guy is, he might be the best receiver.
He's having the best season of any receiver, yeah. That's for sure.
And so if you don't get any pressure on Big Ben, which is always tough because it just seems like he can pump fake his way in and out of pressure, it's going to be a long day. And when you don't have the quality guys to, I think that's a big thing too.
Well, even when you do get pressure on him, one of his great attributes is he's tough to break down. First of all, he's just huge. He's a massive guy, right?
Yeah.
And He can move, you know, he can shake you off, so he's one of the better quarterbacks in terms of extending the play, even in the face of pressure.
Yeah.
So it puts even more stress on your defense, Tony. I'm guessing, I mean, obviously before, Josh Evans was kind of backing up both spots, but now that he's your starting free safety, maybe you, let's say Cyprian did get hurt, Craig Loesten probably next man up.
Sherrod Martin.
Those are your options.
Those are the options they have on the team right now. I mean, they're not great options, but Winston Guy was a liability when he was on the field.
He kept making the same mistakes over and over and over again.
Right. I mean, look, the fans, do you want accountability or don't you for what is happening on the field with this defense right now? We saw it on the offensive side of the ball. Cam Bradfield didn't belong on the field, and therefore he was no longer on the roster after the game that he had.
Why are these guys on the team? Why are these guys starters?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, certainly that's a fair question. Now, you can make the argument, well, Josh Evans had the foot surgery, wasn't able to compete for that spot. Maybe he wins that spot outright in the offseason. And Winston Guy, Tony, was one of the stars of OTAs. Would you agree with that? Now, that's to our eye, okay? And the thing that when you watch OTAs, Dave, you know this even from, I'm sure, from a player's perspective, the guys that shine are the receivers and the defensive backs, right? Because there's no contact going on. So Winston Guy is roaming around. I don't know if he's in the right spot or he's Johnny on the spot, but he's making interceptions. He's taking them back to the house. I mean, he's doing that in the preseason. He's doing that in practices. He looks like he's going to be a dynamic ball hawk back there. And then you get in there and maybe you realize, I don't know, was he freelancing a little too much? Well, did he know the plays? Because you go up against the same guys with the same routes all the time. I don't know what it was, but you know, they probably did try to fit a round peg in a square hole or vice versa. They knew, and Gus said all along, he is another strong safety, but we think he runs well enough that he can cover side to side. And athletically, he probably could, but he didn't have the mental discipline to achieve that.
Yeah, clearly he just wasn't a gamer. You know, you got to be able to take it from the practice field to the game field. And he just did not do that. You know, you can't look great in shorts, because we say that all the time, man, this guy looks really good. But then we get to the game and we're like, where's the same guy that we saw on Thursday, you know, that we saw all during OTAs? And sometimes when you're in OTAs, you're only putting a few plays in, you're practicing a few plays so you can be real sharp and, you know, on your job at that time. But when you get to the game, you got a lot of things that you got to be able to deal with that come up that you got to be able to midstream adjust. And I just think at times he wasn't. And like you said, he had his eyes in the wrong place. He had his leverage was off, and he was setting himself up. But those are the things that you can't continue to have, and you won't have them when you, you know, send guys elsewhere.
Well, at least like Tony said, you got to have accountability. I mean, you continue to make the same mistakes. There's got to be a consequence ultimately. And, he felt the consequence this week. 641-1010. Eric, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good. What's up?
Good, good. Hey, just a couple things. David Garrard's one of my favorite quarterbacks behind Warren Moon and Mark Brunell all time. That's my favorite. Second of all, a little trip down memory lane. You guys remember the New England game. Was it Dennis Northcutt that dropped that winning touchdown or Matt Jones when we were in New England in the playoffs?
Northcutt dropped one that could have tied the game at that point.
Okay.
It wasn't like to win the game at the end, but it was the, you know, obviously, Dave, you remember, you guys
was
were keeping pace.
Yeah,
absolutely, because you guys were trading punches, and that would have kept you on pace. And that was a day when you talked about baking a cake. Brady had on his little Uggs apron. He had a whole bakery open.
I got smacked pretty hard on that play too, so that made me a little bit more disappointed too.
Yeah. Eric, I think Eric just dropped off. I don't know if he had a question or not. Sorry about that, Eric.
It was significant.
It was. Because I looked up thinking, I think I put it in a pretty good place, so we should be screaming touchdown here, and nobody is excited.
Hands apparently were not the right spot to stick it on that occasion. All right, 641-1010. Time has passed. We've all healed. We can kid. All right, 7 years after the fact. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, get more of your calls. We'll hear from Blake Bortles as well, meeting with the media as he does every Wednesday. We'll get the thoughts of the Jaguars starting quarterback getting ready to make his home starting debut against Pittsburgh this weekend. And again, tweet us or post on the Facebook page a photo of you with or wearing your most obscure Jaguar jersey, and you have a chance to win a pair of tickets to this Sunday's game. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you, Jaguars Today, on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
this is Johnny Cash.
I know. We had Red Hot Chili Peppers. Okay. And that was Higher Ground. This is I Walk the Line. Walk, ground, ground game.
Nope.
Walk before you can run.
Nope.
Cash. Cash in.
Nope.
You're something.
Nope.
Moving along. Here we go. Off to another terrific start today.
I'll give you an easy one after this date.
You don't have to. You don't have to.
No? Okay.
I liked the one Mike Borkman guessed that because Flea is in the Red Hot Chili Peppers. You were referencing Palomalu has fleas up in that.
Yeah, I like that too.
So I
love when,
case.
When people tweet their guesses. I love that.
Yeah.
It means they're paying attention.
Send them especially to @1010XLWarren, but send them to all of us.
And, so you get the help.
I'm serious because you're the one who knows what the music theme is. You could send it to me, but I have no idea. You might be right. You might be wrong.
Correct.
So that's all I'm saying, Lauren. Brooks, how you doing? How's everything with you?
Good. I'm excited for tailgating Sunday morning.
We've got, I know, 3 home games in the next 4 weeks, so we actually get to see you out and about on the pregame show.
Exactly. And our friends Keith and Eric have promised you breakfast burritos again.
Oh, breakfast burrito.
They said that they will make sure you have those.
I better remember not to eat too much for the pregame show, because that thing is, that's pretty big, man.
They are big.
They were big. All right, let's get to a little bit of Blake Bortles now. He talked yesterday to the media as he is now the guy and was asked about what's the difference now in practice going from, you know, being the backup, obviously, where you're not getting those first team reps, you're working with the scout team, to now, what is it like being the starter?
Last week was similar to the weeks before where I wasn't playing, you know, getting in there with Chad and watching film, doing all that stuff. But I mean, I think during practice, you know, taking each rep, you know, kind of visualizing things and seeing it and really taking it from, you know, this is how it looked on film and how we think it's going to look, to taking it on the practice field and saying, okay, you know, this is how it should look. This is where the ball should be. And I think, you know, you're not going to get to throw every ball. You're not going to get to throw every rep in practice. And you know, when something happens in the game and it's not what you repped in practice, you got to be able to adjust and make the throw. So I mean, I think that's something that was huge, just to pay attention to the whole picture, rather than the you know, the one we're circling, saying this is where we think it's going to happen.
And so far, Tony, I mean, nothing seemed too big for him.
No,
right? I mean, everything he takes pretty much in stride.
No, and he's funny about practice too. I can remember the clip of him standing on the sideline that first preseason game, and they had the mic'd up, and he's being asked because he had gone in and done what he did in that preseason game. And there's guys on Chad Bumpus, I think, was the one asking him. He's like, what's up with that, man? Where's that all week? He's like, I suck at practice. Like, it's just, that's who he is, but it's showing up on the field every week and watching him try to make that adjustment from figuring out how to do it during the week to, I think it's interesting listening to him try to adjust to that, although he sounds like a 10-year vet already, handling the media the way that he does. He was also asked about, we talked about it earlier, the shots downfield. There weren't a bunch of them last week in that game, so he talked about the emphasis of taking those shots down the field.
You know, not so much yet. You know, we definitely have some stuff in, you know, just like we do every week on, you know, trying to move the ball downfield. And, you know, if there was opportunities there that I missed or didn't see or whatever, you know, those are just, you know, different examples of things to see and learn from and realize, you know, where you could have or should have gone with the ball.
Lauren blamed the quick trigger on the splint. She's wearing the splint for the dislocated
finger. The splint really is annoying, I must tell you. It's on the finger that touches the mouse, so if there are any mistakes,
that's
the splint
issue that I've noticed.
That's because I've been using my middle finger, but now I'm trying to start using the main finger, because if I don't use it, it really hurts when I take the splint off.
I'm used to that. All right, moving on. Dave, we hear, as one of the callers compared Bortles style to you, I'm sure you've been compared to Ben Roethlisberger before. Big, strong guy, mobility, all that whole thing, but he has said he's heard that for a long time. When did those Roethlisberger comparisons start for Blake Bortles?
A while ago, but I mean, like, he's won 2 Super Bowls and been in all kinds of Pro Bowls, and I played 1 game, so there's a big difference there. But I mean, he's definitely been somebody that has been fun to watch. You know, we have the same agent. You know, we've been in contact, we've thrown together, and you know, he's been somebody that's been a lot of fun to watch and talk to. And but I mean, I've heard that for a while.
You know, Roethlisberger, people talk about his physicality a lot. He throws one of the prettiest balls in the league, doesn't he? I mean,
he does.
You rarely see even the hint of a wobble in any of his passes, unless he's getting crushed, you know, while he's letting it go.
You know what? The way he pumps the ball in the pocket, to me, I thought when he first started, I said, man, this guy's not going to last very long. He is pumping the ball too much, and he stands in there when guys are just plowing him and just running through him, and he shakes him off and keeps going. And I'm thinking, just get the ball out of your hands. You know, find the open guy earlier. But he, man, the way he ad-libs and allows guys to change their routes, and they usually turn up field, and he always finds them.
You wonder if that face plant into the car, maybe just he feels like it can't be any worse.
I'm invincible.
I've already hit rock bottom in terms of contact.
I've had my leg bent backwards. I came back and played the second half of that game. I mean, it's crazy the injuries that he's played through in his career.
He's a tough guy.
The one though, speaking of the pump fake, was it the opener?
It was week two against Carolina.
Week two. Okay, the full fake to the left, then the ball fake to get a defensive lineman out of the picture, and he scrambles to the right and lofts at one of the corner of the end zone. Is still, I think, that, and I put Kaepernick's to Gore this week. To me, probably the two most memorable TD passes.
This play happened and then got called back. Aaron Rodgers in the Green Bay game, man. This dude.
Oh, I know the play.
Yes,
man.
He made about 18 guys miss in the pocket, and then out of the corner of his eye, saw his receiver on the other side of the field, threw it basically over his head, and his legs got taken out underneath him. So he's halfway flipped upside down in the air while the ball is still traveling, and his receiver catches the ball in the back corner of the end zone. But then they called holding on one of his linemen or something like that and brought it back. I was like, that was the play of the month right there.
You almost were like, he escaped three sacks and then got hit high and low while he was throwing the ball and threw it across the field.
Amazing.
I don't know how I missed unreal. That. It's like you want to get out of jail free card, though. Like, one time a game, nope, that holding does not matter.
Yeah.
That
play this was play good. Was too
this
great.
Must stand.
I like how you think.
Yeah.
Blake Bortles also talked about Dick LeBeau coming to town, that 3-4 defense. It's brought blitzes from all over the place, difficult for quarterbacks to deal with. He talks about the challenges that Pittsburgh brings.
You know, I think they're really good at what they do. Obviously, they do a bunch of different things. They got some veteran guys over there that have seen a lot of ball and have been around for a while and, you know, have seen just about everything. So, you know, I think they're solid in what they do. They're aggressive defense that goes after and attacks the ball. So, I mean, we're going to have to be sharp and exact on what we do.
It is so funny how it's evolved over the years. I mean, Pittsburgh, you think of that Neil O'Donnell-led squad that went to the Super Bowl that, you know, it was good enough to get to the Super Bowl, but the offense didn't strike the fear into you. Now you got Antonio Brown, as we said, as dangerous as anybody playing right now. Le'Veon Bell is playing so well.
I like that guy.
And, I mean, just powerful, quick, fast, great receiver out of the backfield. A lot of things. He's got Heath Miller kind of as a safety blanket, and they're trying to bring Marcus Wheaton in, but it's the defense that's been mediocre. So definitely a big change with Pittsburgh over the last, 20 years or so.
You know, it's the linebackers. I'm not trying to just blame that group, but it is. They've always had studs, and when they bring those cross dogs in the middle there, they're always edgy and helping their D-line out, getting to the quarterback, and there's always a lot of mass confusion in there. But they're getting picked up so easy now by the offensive line. I think they're giving away a lot of their blitzes, so they know what's coming. They're not nearly as edgy. And the guys, I think the quality of them just isn't the same like it used to be. And so that puts a lot of stress on your secondary because you don't have as many guys back there covering. And they're covering zones that, you know, guys are running free in with the quarterbacks having a lot of time. So There's quite a few things that are wrong with the defense.
Obviously, missing Ryan Shazier last week. They're the 15th overall pick out of Ohio State. That's a big blow because he's off to a good start this season. What about the wide receiver core? As Blake talked about, the current crop of receivers here in Jacksonville, plus the fact that Ace Sanders returns from his suspension.
They've done a great job all year of stepping up when one of them gets hurt. You know, I think that, you know, obviously having Ace back, is a huge help, and we're excited for him. Excited to have him back out there this week practicing, and look forward to seeing what he can do. You know, I know for the rest of the guys, they're going to continue to step up and make plays, you know, like they've done all year when their number's been called.
You heard it here first yesterday, Mark Long of the Associated Press letting you know before the story really broke that Justin Blackmon, didn't have all the details at the time, but that Justin Blackmon had started to take some responsibility to put himself in position to maybe clean up his situation in the National Football League. I think, you know, from my perspective, if you're a Jaguar fan, you can have that hope in the back of your mind. There's nothing wrong with that, and envision what it could look like if you had Blackman and Robinson and Lee and Hearns, and because right now it's tough to envision Cecil Shorts getting any kind of a long-term deal here in Jacksonville. So, you know, the fact that he's halfway through a 90-day rehab assignment, wish him the best, man, and, you know, just don't get your hopes up, I guess, is the best way to look at it, Dave. If you get him, great. If you don't, then, you know, you can talk about the wasted talent, I suppose, at some point down the line. But, you know, people have asked me all summer long, why don't they just get rid of him? His name will pop up, and it's just negative publicity. I'm like, well, if you can withstand a day or so of, you know, suspended Jaguar wide receiver and having your franchise's name attached to that, nobody's blaming the organization for what this guy's doing on his own. And what's the benefit, right, of cutting him loose?
Sure. There's not much benefit to cutting him loose at this point.
I mean, at the very least, you know, if he gets reinstated, if you didn't want him back, somebody would give you a late round pick for him. I mean, he doesn't count against the cap, doesn't count against the roster limit. So,
Well, you really hope that he gets his life straight, and you really hope that he has a higher purpose once he comes back, that he's not just living for himself anymore. And if he comes back a changed man, now you still have that great talent on your team.
Incredibly young stuff.
Yeah. And so you get to add one of the pieces that you've been missing for a long time. So, it's just, do you want to continue to take that chance because he's let you down so many times?
Right. That's the thing. Don't get your hopes up.
Yeah.
Reagan used to say, trust but verify, right? Let's just let this whole thing play out right now.
All right. And finally, before we, get over with the Blake Bortles sound here, let's go to Cut 7, Lauren. What does he consider to be a good performance from him? Because he's been down on his first two, despite how good they've been.
You'll probably know, I guess, because there won't be any incompletions. And we'll have scored on every drive. You know, I don't know. I think it's hard to sit there and, you know, I think when you grade yourself and say, that was really good, I think you kind of get complacent and, you know, stop worrying about things you have to correct. You know, I think you constantly, you pay attention to the things you do well and you want to keep doing that. But I think you have to be huge. You have to be your own worst critic and big on the mistakes you made to try and eliminate those mistakes to, you know, try and put together a good performance.
Well, yeah. I mean, by that standard, he'll never have a good game. Right? And that's fine. I mean, look, I get it. I mean, if you're truly great, you're probably never satisfied or rarely satisfied, right, with what you do?
Yeah. I mean, you should always be trying to get better. You should always say that there was something in that game you could have done better because there really is no perfect game, you know, unless you go 100% with five touchdowns, you know, and everything just clicks off. You can still always find something. I should have checked to this play instead of that play, even though that play worked. We worked all week on me checking to this play, and I missed that check, even though it was still a positive play. So there's still always things that you can be better at.
I think as well, I think he's sincere in that, you know, this is okay, it was average, whatever. I mean, there are things I did well, things I didn't do well. But I think he's also smart enough to realize coming off a double-digit point loss is never the time to talk about how well anybody played on the, you know, as an individual on the football team. Defer to, you know, we all need to get better. And that's just the, you know, again, just I think he's sincere, but at the same time, I think he's pragmatic in how he describes his play.
I think it's in his nature, too.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, what the heck happened on October 2nd historically in the National Football League? Well, let me tell you, the Washington Redskins, as the Boston Braves play their first NFL game on this date, they lose 14-0. The FCC may one day fine me for saying that sentence the way I just did. The Washington football team in the National Football League. The SEC is looking into banning the name Redskins from the airwaves. Also, 1950, this date in NFL history. Bob Shaw established an NFL record with 5 touchdown catches as the Chicago Cardinals defeated the Baltimore Colts 55-13. The record has since been tied twice. Care to guess who may have tied the mark? One receiver, one tight end tied the mark.
The mark for?
For most touchdown catches in a game. Being 5. Any guess?
I'll go Randy Moss.
It was pretty recent, just a few years ago.
Who you got?
I don't have anybody.
Jerry Rice. Nobody wants to guess the greatest receiver of all time. Jerry Rice
and
Kellen Winslow Sr. Did the job. Rice did it in 1990. So, yeah, it was a little ways back. what else do I got on this date in football history, which, by the way, is brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Art Monk began his NFL record streak of consecutive games with a reception, which topped out. Let me bring it up here. Topped out at 183 games. Tim Brown got within four. One player broke the record. Who would it be? Any guesses?
No.
Jerry Rice.
Jerry Rice! Thank you, for goodness sakes. Come on. He did it in 274 games, by
Holy
the way.
Cow.
So he's like, yeah, I'm going to probably just sneak on past Art Monk and then add another 90 on top of that. So that's what he did. 274 straight. For Jerry Rice,
that's crazy.
This date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on Gate Parkway. Call 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger addressed the comparisons that have been made between himself and Blake Bortles yesterday, saying that Bortles is, quote, a young me. He went on to say, I liked him coming out. I thought he was the most ready and a guy that I thought could be the best just because I think the things he does, he can extend plays, he can stay in, he can throw the ball, he can throw on the run. He's an impressive type young player. He makes some rookie mistakes, but he also makes some plays that you don't expect rookies to make in a good way. The NFL and DirecTV have extended their relationship for another 8 years that will keep the Sunday Ticket exclusively on DirecTV. The deal they were working under now was for $1 billion a year. And while the terms of the new agreement have not officially been announced, a source with knowledge of the deal said that the new agreement is for $1.5 billion a year. And while nothing is official yet, Dallas Cowboys safety C.J. Spillman is under investigation in connection with an alleged sexual assault that occurred in September at the Cowboys team hotel. Spillman has been reportedly fully cooperating with the investigation. To be clear, to this point, Spillman has not been charged with any wrongdoing or arrested yet. And before we go here, a happy birthday to the Jags' fourth-round pick this year. Aaron Colvin turns 23 years old
this
today.
This day in football history, Aaron Colvin turned 23 years old. Nicely played, sir. Fat Tony dropping the Jaguar knowledge on you right there. Let's all, lest anyone's thinking it, I'll say it. Hopefully, Blake Bortles is a replica of Ben Roethlisberger on the field, because questionable judgment may be the nicest way you can put it for Ben off the field. At times, you know,
sure.
At one point, obviously accused of sexual assault, but never charged with it. A couple of different women brought up accusations, but again, no charges filed. But there's always been a feeling that there was a knucklehead factor with Ben, that, you know, riding his motorcycle without a helmet wasn't the best decision, but it doesn't make you a bad person necessarily. So, you know, I don't know Roethlisberger personally. Dave, my understanding is, word around the league has been once he had his issues and he realized he needed to kind of change his ways, he was never necessarily a team favorite in the locker room, and that he realized that, hey, I'm not above the law, I'm not above the team, that he did kind of take it to heart and maybe kind of reined it in a little bit, or realized that he's not bigger than the entire organization and that he has changed from that standpoint. I don't know if you know Ben personally at all.
I don't know him that much, but I would just think of him as he came in young and had a lot of success right away. So he had a lot of things going for him. And I think in his mind, he thought he was invincible. He thought he could do pretty much whatever he wanted. Some things he took a little too far probably. And just had to have a dose of reality just kind of slapped in his face with all the things that were going on. And you would hope and think that with somebody like Jameis that is going through a lot of these same similar things, that he would just say, you know what? Okay, I am not bigger than all this stuff. And a lot of these things are things that would send me to jail. So I need to get a grip. You know, just because I'm the starting quarterback and I've won a Heisman, I could take that Heisman right to my jail cell if I don't straighten up or not.
Trade that for a pack of smokes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so you hate for guys that go through so many different things before they snap out of it because, you know, you never know which one of those things they might not be able to get out of. And, yeah, but I just think Ben, being a young guy, had to go through some things, had to have his teammates kind of call him out a little bit and say, you know what, we can find somebody else to come in here. We don't mind you not being our quarterback, whatever it is, to get a little fire lit under him to say, you know what, I need to straighten myself up. I need to straighten myself up for life, period. And it looks like he has.
You know, I don't know what Roethlisberger did or didn't do. You know, I don't know what Jameis Winston did or didn't do. And I know there are people out there that are convinced they know, but I don't know how anybody really knows. But beyond the stuff that can get you thrown in jail, just you've got in that position that you played, you got to be bigger than all the just the dumb stuff too, right? Just even the stuff that's not necessarily illegal, just the embarrassing stuff. You and I think that we've talked about this since the day they drafted Blake Bortles, and Dave Caldwell really preached about this guy gets it, you know, from all angles of being the quarterback, that if you hope he can play as well as he seems to be built to handle it personality wise, playing the position. He seems almost like, you know, just if you're going to kind of build the blueprint of what you want with the moxie and the intangibles of a QB, that he's got a lot of that.
Well, at the quarterback position, you have to have a good moral compass. And if you're just out there willy-nilly like the rest of the guys, then you're going to get caught up. There were plenty of times that guys on my team, whether it was college or even here in the league, that would be out doing all kinds of things, and they knew to never call me to come over and hang out, you know, because they knew that being the quarterback of a franchise, you can't be caught doing a lot of the things that you're doing, even if a lot of the things were legal and, you know, whatever it is. That's just not my scene. That's not where I'm going to be. That's not where, you know, the feds or somebody decide to break in and finally, you know, try to stop whatever's going on here. That's not where I'm going to be caught up. That's not where I'm going to be. I'm going to have enough discernment, enough intelligence to know that, you know what, I'm just going to go to the movies and enjoy a movie. I'm going to go see The Equalizer.
Again.
You guys go have fun. And you have to know that inside. You have to know that inside your person. And you also have to know that when you're in a situation, I'm not saying I've never been in a situation before, but I always knew that if I was in a situation that started going the wrong way,
get out.
I knew it was time to go.
Yeah.
Period. I don't care what it was. If I had to just take off and start walking because I couldn't get a ride, I'm just going to walk myself out of the situation.
I would think smart teammates know which guys not to even try to put in that situation. But you ever get any pushback or any, you ever feel any, you know, bad vibe because people are like, oh, this guy, well, he thinks he's, you know, special or above it all or whatever?
No. The only kind of pushback is you're not going to get called to go to do a lot of these things. And that's okay because the guys knew that I was the starting quarterback. You know, you don't want me to be out doing everything that everybody else is doing because I can't. And you don't want your quarterback to be in those situations. Now, if you call him over to the house because you're watching the game, you're going to have a couple drinks, that kind of thing, that's fine. But, you know, all the other extracurricular activities, you don't want to be the one that gets your quarterback caught up. And now if your quarterback does it himself and he's the one that's doing all
this Johnny Football,
you know, then and that's the case. But I just always knew that I wasn't going to put myself in a situation. And then I always knew which guys that I could hang around and everything would be okay. And they knew that if I was going to be around, that a lot of things weren't going to go on. And if they were, like I said, I was leaving.
All right, let's take a time out here. We will come back and hear from Jed Fish, Jaguar offensive coordinator, weighing in on Blake Bortles and where this offense stands. Obviously, needs to get more points on the board, and the defense needs to do its job as well. 0-4, losing every game by double digits. We'll check in with the OC of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Straight ahead, it is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. I don't know. Is this the one that's supposed to clear it up for me, Lauren?
Nope, you said no easy. So
okay, good. David Bowie, Sound and Vision. I got no idea. That's fine. Moving right along. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today. Let's hear from the offense coordinator of your Jacksonville Jaguars. That would be, of course, Jed Fish. Yesterday, meeting with the media, Jed's always got a smile on his face.
He does.
You know, he always seems like he's in a pretty good mood regardless. I talked yesterday about the learning curve for Blake Bortles as he learns how to game plan as a starter in the National Football League.
It's not as much for us what we're asking him to put in the plan. It's kind of the flow of the game and how I call the game for him and how, what he wants and what he likes and what he needs and how he needs to get rhythm. So for that, we kind of more choreograph the game differently. So that's kind of what the learning curve is right now.
Couple of big injuries on the offensive side of the ball. Mercedes Lewis, Cecil Shorts, both out. He talked a little bit about both those players being hurt.
It's unfortunate, right? It really is, you know, because what we do know is when Mercedes came back at the end of last season and was healthy, I think he caught a touchdown in like four games in a row. I think he made some big plays. This year he started off and made a big play for us against Washington, had a couple big plays early on, and then we lost him. Had a good preseason going, really good preseason going. And then with Cecil, you know, even though I felt like we haven't had him a lot, I know he still had the most amount of catches or something, you know, last year. And then we also, last game, caught that third down play, made a nice catch there, caught the second or third play of the game after the third play of the game where we ran a little boot and he had a 12-yard gain. He had two catches for 25 yards. So, that was good. It was just, this really is unfortunate because I think those guys together could really give us a nice boost, you know.
What was it like, Dave, when you had players in your team that just seemed to just have that injury bug? I mean, were those guys, I mean, everyone says, you know, if you're hurt, if you're not practicing, you don't even feel like you're part of the team. How tough was it for those kind of guys to, did you have teammates that you felt, for whatever reason, just seemed kind of jinxed?
You know, I don't know if I've ever been around somebody like Cecil where it just seems like he gives you, you know, a great three games and then he's back in the training room. It's tough. It's tough for somebody to be so young to show promise so many times and it not be for reasons like Blackman. It's not because he's, you know, off, you know, on the streets doing the wrong thing. He's working his butt off. He's trying his hardest. He makes the plays when he's out there, but then, you know, those doggone hamstrings and it's growing. He can't get over them. And you have so much time in the off season where you're resting and they rest him during OTAs and, you know, he tweaks this and he tweaks that. And you almost feel jinxed. I know he almost feels jinxed. I had another player, Zach Miller, who was here as a tight end, good friend of mine, still is. He is another guy that you're like, man.
Every year.
Yeah, every year.
The season would be lost for him.
Zach Miller had a great preseason game. He started when they let Bennett, go for a week or so. Gets out there, has two touchdowns, almost 100 yards receiving. The next game, he's going out to block on a draw where he's not even a part of the play and has another Liz Frank. I mean, you just can't imagine what these guys go through when they go through the same thing over and over again. And it's got to stress them. It's got to bother them internally because it's nothing they can do. I mean, they try to be in the best shape and in the best health as possible, and they go into the treatment room and the training room every day, even when they're healthy, to try to stay healthy, to just stay with the maintenance of things, and they still can't get away from it. So, you know, I just pray for them as much as I can, and then hopefully they can get back out there and have that longevity of not having to go back into the training room.
And that was this preseason that you're talking about with Martellus Bennett.
Yeah.
They sat him down. What was it, Tony? Like conduct detriment? You know, yeah. Something like
He slammed Kyle Fuller.
Yeah, Kyle Fuller.
That's right.
Body
yeah.
slammed him.
That's right. That's right. And so anyway, yeah, he popped up. You're like, wow, okay, that's where he landed. Look at him. And wouldn't it be ironic if he finally, you know, leaves Jacksonville and gets healthy and then he couldn't,
nope.
You know, next week. There you
so,
go.
So
once again, Ace Sanders, as we said, he is back. And Jed Fish talked about what his role might be.
We expected a lot from Clay Harbor in his first game back. I think he had 61 plays, and he was out since Bartram Trail. So Ace will have to find a way to be ready to go. And then with that, we have to continue to evaluate where Marquise is and see where that's going. And then also, you know, see where we are with the other spots. But he'll play some plays now, and excited to get him back, obviously.
What are you grinning at over there?
It's just as a guy who does the high school scoreboard every Friday night to hear a guy say he's been out since Bartram Trail. As an NFL
point.
Coach, kind of it weirded me out a little
bit. It was kind of interesting, right? But in all seriousness, they could use a boost in the punt return game. The question is, will Ace Sanders give them that? Because while he was dynamic in that capacity at South Carolina, really didn't add anything last year, you know? And now he added a lot offensively that you didn't expect, so it was a successful rookie season for him. But we'll see if he's able to do it. Lauren wants to know if we could pad up the podium as well. It doesn't matter. With
he's
Jet
a podium
Fish,
hitter.
You heard him. If you heard him in the pregame last week, he was banging. He is this. He pounds the gavel. He drops the fist. He just, that's who he is.
And, am I the first person to think of that?
To pad the podium so he would be banging a pad on there.
Yes.
You're probably not the first, but I don't think.
Tell Jessica to bring like a neck pillow or something. Just put it
right,
there
right.
Before.
We would have to provide that for you because A, the writers don't care. I don't think the team cares. You know what I mean?
The team should care. I care.
It's just, that's just a raw, behind the scenes audio that you're getting there. That is, Jed Fish Unplugged.
Think about
that's
right. It's wired. Like a ping pong in the locker room. We're taking you inside the
right.
building.
This is what what's happening in the locker room.
No doubt. Jed Fish also talked about the poise and composure of his young quarterback, Blake Bortles.
He really is such a composed and poised guy. I mean, it's uncanny when you talk to him on the sideline during the game how really relaxed he is, you know, and he's just got he just has this confidence and this air about him. I do think the first play of the game, he kind of got a little whacked out. And then after that, he completely settled down. I think maybe the first play of the game this week, he won't get whacked out. You know, I think, but of course, on the same token, now it's at home, right? So now your first start is at home, and the energy and the excitement, the enthusiasm that our fans are going to bring on Sunday, it's going to be awesome. So we'll have to see. But I do think each week, you know, I mean, he went against a quarterback that's thrown for 30,000 yards, right, in the National Football League this past week in San Diego. And at that time, Blake threw for 234 yards, you know, against Indy. So there was quite a discrepancy in terms of experience, and I thought he handled himself real well there. So it'll continue.
Even when he's matter of fact, still, that's how he got
whacked
out.
I didn't even know he was doing that until Lauren brought that
and
up.
And then now you'll hear nothing.
And that's all I heard.
Okay, now I feel bad. Sorry.
Well, I guess the big growth from start one to start two is try not to get whacked out on the first play of the game.
We got since Bartram Trail and whacked out.
Yes.
Same press conference.
We get the Blake Bortles, Roethlisberger comparison question for Blake, and now here's Jed Fish weighing in on that.
Here's what I know about Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger's won two Super Bowls. He's been to the Pro Bowl numerous times. He's led his team to unbelievable success. Would it be great if one day we can make that comparison? Maybe. You know, sure. But at this point right now, I think Blake Bortles needs to just concentrate on being Blake Bortles, the best he can be. And let's just let those Ben Roethlisberger comparisons be with, you know, for other people to make. I think right now he's got a great skill set. He's got a ton to develop, a ton to learn. He's a blast to coach, and that's really all I have on that one.
Sure. And look, the comparisons are going to go on whether they want to address them or not, and hopefully we do get to a point where we're comparing them in win columns and Super Bowls and stats and all that kind of thing. In the very near future, Coach was also asked about, we talked about this offense growing together at the same time. And I think that you've seen steps week to week, especially from that offensive line, as they continue to gel together in that front five. Coach Fish talked about that offensive line getting better.
I thought our offensive line together improved. They communicated best. We were the most efficient in the running game. You're not going to get as many yards when you have 10 short yardage plays. You know, when you have 2 4th-and-1s, you have 5 3rd-and-1s, and then you have 3 plays inside the 5-yard line that you ran the ball all 3 times. So you can only get X amount of yards, you know, unless you break a third and one. You have 10 out of 25 plays where really it's going to be tough sledding. But our efficiency in the running game was the best, and I think it was because of their communication. They're playing now. Now they're kind of, the group is getting a little bit in sync. You know, now we get Pastor is going to see what he looks like, you know, and see how that develops. But I think in terms of the offensive line, Zane and Luke played better. I think Bowenko is going to continue to improve. I think Brandon Linder is going to keep improving, and then Sam and Pastor D will be fun to watch.
The offensive line did appear to play better, less noticeable, at least in the protection. Some of that, obviously, is the quarterback, right? Quicker decisions, getting out of trouble that maybe would have resulted in sacks with Henny or some other less mobile quarterback. But overall, there's some sense that they themselves are playing better, at least did this past week.
I think a lot of it is because of Blake. I think the way that he can move in the pocket, the way that he can get out of trouble whenever they put him in trouble, I think the way that they put him on boots and nakeds and keepers, that just opened up things for the run game to be more efficient. I told you guys it would be because I knew the defense would have to take an account for him because he can move, he can run. So he's going to keep the defensive ends and the linebackers' eyes slightly on him when he rides the running back and then he escapes without the ball. But they have to honor that because he can run. So even when he gave the ball or when he pulled the ball, he still had some room on the edge there because they didn't want to overcommit too much. But once he started getting those runs in, they knew they would have to and just look for the run game to continue to get better. And they'll say that the offensive line is gelling better and that their communication's better, and which I'm sure it is getting better. But it's because of Blake and his ability to use his legs is why it's going to get better.
All right, finally, Jed Fish talking about defensively, despite the fact that they, you know, statistically have been pretty mediocre this year, what are the problems that the Steeler defense will present this week?
Other than the fact that they're extremely creative, so they give you a lot of looks, they challenge you in terms of what coverage are they playing, what's the result coverage, not the early coverage they show you. Palomalu is a fantastic player, still is, has been forever. We played Pittsburgh 10 times when I was there in Baltimore from 04 to 07, whether it be a playoff game or whether it be regular season games. And, I mean, you constantly are challenged to handle protections. You're constantly challenged to handle their zone droppers. And they're going to give us all we can handle.
All right, there you go. Jed Fish, Jaguar offensive coordinator, weighing in midweek on Blake Bortles, his progress, and what the Steelers present this week. What do you think? What was your feeling? Do you think, I mean, certainly Pittsburgh is a step down from most of the teams they played, although Washington's no gangbuster squad out there. When you look at their offensive skill guys right now, it's tough for me to imagine the Jags containing Antonio Brown as well as he's playing right now. But what does your gut tell you? Is this a more competitive game, a fourth quarter game? Do you think the Jags have a good chance to win?
Yeah, I see this game being closer. Unfortunately, I still see the Steelers winning. I just don't think we're going to be able to stop them enough on defense. But I see Blake and the guys moving the ball. I see them putting up points. Like I said, I think it's going to get into the fourth quarter where it is a closer game, or at least we have a chance to, you know, make a push there late to try to get caught up, to try to tie the game, or to try to go for a win. But there's still just too many areas, you know, even offensively, with Blake being a young guy. He's going to make his plays, but he's going to have some plays that aren't very good too. But then you can always just count on the defense, it seems like, to not make very many plays, which is kind of sad.
Well, let's hope that turns around this week, and we will turn around, come back, and take a look at the fan feedback spotlight presented by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking you today, who's the most obscure Jaguar whose jersey you ever owned? And if you send us video proof, either on Facebook or on Twitter, you got a chance to win a pair of tickets to this Sunday's game, Jacksonville versus Pittsburgh, which will be available to pick up as early as this afternoon over at the 1010XL Studios, 9090 Hogan Road. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with the Jaguars today. Rolls on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I'm Jessica Blaylock with your Rubber Meets the Road Play of the Game, brought to you by Big Chief Tire, operated by a family that treats you like you're part of it. It was a tough start to Sunday's game for Jaguars running back Toby Gerhart. Gerhart fumbled in the red zone when the Jaguars had the chance to take the lead early in the first quarter. Fortunately for Gerhart, he was able to redeem himself in the second quarter when he scored his first ever touchdown for Jacksonville.
Three tight end set. Toffolo the fullback, Gerhart the tailback. Bortles under center. Here we go. Gerhart to the left. Did he get in this time? Touchdown, Jaguars. This time he is in. And the Jags now have taken the lead.
The Jaguars' run game finished the day with 7 rushing first downs and 85 rushing yards total. That was your play of the game brought to you by Big Chief Tire. Big Chief Tire, for all your tire and service needs. 4 convenient locations around the Jacksonville area.
Blackman theme?
Yes! I knew you'd get it eventually now, with this one.
Now Walk the Line makes sense.
Yeah, this is Amy Winehouse.
Sound I just happened to have the wrong group of guys.
Yeah.
Sound and Vision?
That was David Bowie. He went to rehab.
Oh, come on. What singer didn't go to rehab? So it's the singers who
it's
went to
musicians
rehab?
That went to rehab.
Oh, my goodness.
Winehouse was in and out of rehab several times before she passed away. Way too
musicians.
Young.
Musicians. Yeah, well.
Hey, it was a Justin Blackman-inspired theme. I thought it was good.
I was kind of in the ballpark. We were talking off the air. I said, is this about Blunt? And
he did think Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blunt may be
their issues.
In this.
Yeah, you were close. You were close.
You're an Amy Winehouse fan?
I love Amy Winehouse. Yeah. I really do. I really do.
I did too.
She only had the couple albums, but, man, they were fantastic. I like that old kind
of voice.
That smoky voice. It was great.
Anybody see Aretha on David Letterman singing Adele?
No.
Okay. Deadspin posted the clip from me yesterday, or it was somebody, something on Gawker Media, and they said, you know, something like, she absolutely tears the roof off. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be fantastic. I didn't think so.
It was
much.
Not very good.
I mean, I remember when Aretha really did tear the roof off. And
she's
Aretha doesn't
now.
Mean you need to give her a freebie here.
Well, yeah. Amy would freak you out. I've seen a couple of like her live concert stuff on like Palladio or whatever. And when she sings, your voice changes when you sing, especially with that British accent. But she's like cockneyed. Her actually, she's like, hello, everybody. And then she'll start singing. And I'm like, where is this coming from? Because I would never want to sit and have a conversation with that. But her voice was just amazing. I loved it.
Magnificent. There you go.
I loved it.
I'm glad you did. And you can buy her records in perpetuity.
Yes, you can.
By the way, speaking of dead celebrities, did you see, who am I thinking of? Latka. Andy Kaufman. You see the story that came out the other day?
No.
His I don't know, his friend is... manager, something like that, right? Andy Kaufman used to be on Taxi. What did he supposedly die of?
It was something in his stomach.
It was something that happened quick, and and there have been rumors for years that he faked his death, right?
Huh. Wouldn't be beyond Andy Kaufman with everything he's done.
Right. I mean, he was big into like performance art, you know?
Yeah.
He did the whole thing with Jerry Lawler, which. You still, to this day, you can't tell what was real, what was fake about that.
I can beat any woman.
In wrestling.
Yes.
But his man, whoever it was, he's written a book, and that's probably why he's talking about it. But
sure.
He claims he did fake his death, and that he found a guy who was terminally ill, who looked a lot like him, and basically switched places with the guy. And that he, I know, it's great, but this has been gone on, you know, the whole Elvis is alive thing, you know, had legs only in the National Enquirer. There are people that definitely believe Andy Kaufman is still alive.
So is Andy finally passed, or?
Well, no, he thinks that he said he told Andy he would keep his mouth shut for 30 years, and it's been 30 years, and he said enough time has passed, but then there's another woman who's come out and said he did, that he's right, he faked it, but that he died of AIDS in San Francisco like 2 years after he... originally was supposed to have died the first time. I don't know what
that?
To tell you on that whole front.
Yeah, it was the inner gender champion or something like that. I can't remember
what he
had. He made an official belt for himself.
It was so ridiculous,
where he would
man.
Only wrestle women.
It was it was tremendous. Anyway, today we will. Oh, I tell you what, we'll get to that in a second. The Foundation Professionals of Florida photo contest still ongoing. It'll go on until week 7 of the regular season. We're giving away a pair of tickets to the Jags-Cleveland game, mm-hmm. as well as a couple of passes to the 1010XL pregame party that will take place right outside Gate 1 on that week as well. And the theme is Old School Jaguars, so you can go to the Jaguars Today Facebook page, which is simply facebook.com/Jaguars Today, and post a photo of whatever defines Old School Jaguars to you. And if you have a good one, you'll go in drawing, and we'll give away a pair of tickets during the week of that game, courtesy of Foundation Professionals of Florida, who feel that you, the fans, are the foundation of the organization. Likewise, they know that having a firm foundation for your home is critical to your most important investment. That would be your house. So they're licensed and insured. Give them a call at 287-2690 if you have issues with your home's foundation, or visit foundationprosfl.com. Today we asked you who's the most obscure Jaguar, whose jersey you own or owned, and if you had photo proof of that, you had a chance to go into the drawing today. Not even a drawing. We'll just pick the most obscure one and give you a pair of tickets to go see Jacksonville and Pittsburgh on Sunday. What do we get, Tony?
Here's some of the response we got via Twitter from Joshua. I don't have any pictures because I'm at work. I used to own a Micah Ross jersey. His sister taught my sister at pre-kindergarten.
Yeah, and Micah, who's a heavy tweeter, by the way. Mike is a good doobie, and I had to tweet to Mike and say, "You're not obscure, bro.
No,
we know you. We love you."
No, he was like, "What did I do?"
I know.
I enjoyed the thread. You were like, "He's great," or whatever, and he's like, "Thank you." What did I do? He had no idea.
You're just you, Micah.
From Eric, we got, he's not obscure, but the lowest profile jersey I own is Mike Peterson right before he was released. Good timing on that one. From Richard, the most obscure jersey is Blaine Gabbert. I can't take a pick because the jersey is burned. From Brock, I like to think that he's not obscure because Deji was the man on kickoff returns. He included the photo of the Deji Kareem 35. There from Kevin, we got, I'm working, but there is a D-Web jersey in my closet. Ugh. From Tommy,
that
we got
qualified.
Yeah. From Tommy, we got section jerseys I had created, also have black and white versions, which are pretty cool. Section 216 is the photo he includes on the back. It reads, "Not up in here." It's an excited dude. From Irish Jaguar, it's not obscure in the least, but the oldest jersey I own is Rasheen Mathis. And from Christoph, he sent me the picture, Andre Rison is the most obscure jersey that he owns. But those do not qualify as winners, Mike, because of one we got.
Well, hold on. Before we get to the winner, let me get a couple more submissions that we got on Facebook today. Got another Rison. Rison's not obscure, I don't think, anyway. Got a Montel Owens. That dude's a Pro Bowler. Are you kidding me? this one from Tyler Fountain. Had he had a photo, may have won, but there's no photo. But I'm going to give him a T-shirt for the hashtag. He went with Josh Gattis. He said, "I thought he was going to be the next Donovan Darius, and he never even played it down. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Hashtag, that's good job." Yes, that is how you play the game, the hashtag game. That is a direct Gus quote to the Jaguar fans after they showed up en masse for the draft party this year.
Yeah.
And you fans.
This guy loves Jacksonville, man.
That's
He's
good job.
He's excited to be here, and I'm excited to see all you guys here, man. That's a great job.
That's great job. Love it. Yeah, that's good stuff. Thank you, Tyler. But yes, Tony, I don't have the winner's name. Do you have the winner's name up in front of you right now?
I do not.
We had the Burr line. You mentioned the Burr line that we just got from Teal Rising a few minutes ago.
I did,
he was a starting quarterback. But no. The one, and I'm scrolling down to find who it is, but the bottom line was Ryan Christopherson was the winner.
Holy cow.
To which, when I pointed him out, here he is, from Jag Weather Fan on Twitter, Dave goes, who?
And then you said, "I think he played with
him." I couldn't remember the time frame. I'm like, he better not have played.
Yeah,
with you.
He better not have.
And he
won't like me right now.
He was the original season. He played 11 games in 1995 and had 16 rushes for 16 yards.
Boom.
Very nice. He was your short yardage converter. Maybe he was in on third and one every time and converted all 16 of them.
Maybe he was.
Although, no way.
Unless that gentleman that sent us that picture is related to Mr. Christopherson, I would say it's about time you got rewarded for that purchase.
That's seriously. Good job. That's good job hanging on to that.
That's good job.
For 20 years. I'm looking at his numbers right now. He had a long rush of 10 yards that year. So his other 15 carries produced 6 yards on the ground. He did score a touchdown, and based on the fact that he played 11 games, he averaged 1.5 yards per game, not per carry.
He was a receiving fullback. That's
that, that must have been it, Dave. He had one catch for -1 yards. That's where they looked to feature him.
He did not live up to his promise.
No, Jagweather fan, I got a pair of tickets for you that you can pick up as early as 2 o'clock this afternoon over at 1010XL World Headquarters at 9090 Hogan Road. All right, Dave, what do you want to see? Final few minutes here. Win or lose, what are the steps you want to see this team take in Week 5?
Well, clearly I want to see the offense. I want to see Blake continue to grow. I want to see them put points up. I want to see them playing well into the fourth quarter. Defensively, just to slow them down. You don't have to stop them. Just slow them down. Just make it something respectable, something that everybody can say, okay, we got better this game. That's what I want to see out of this game. The Jags got better. That's all.
A fourth quarter game would be nice, right?
Yeah.
Like something in doubt in the fourth
something
quarter.
Something that keeps us still watching the game into the fourth quarter.
We had that in Week 1, although it got away from them in the end. This week, I did think against San Diego on the sudden change situations, the defense did a good job on a couple of circumstances. They were given a short field to defend and they were able to hold San Diego to field goals. So there are a few bright spots. It's tough to say they did well when, again, you're putting up 33 points, you're over 400 yards of offense, and if I heard Jeff correctly yesterday, Jeff Prosser, they're on pace to give up the most yards and points in National Football League history through 4 games. Hopefully that will tighten up. Hopefully it starts this week.
Those aren't the records you want.
No, they're not the records you want. Where will you be taking in the game this week?
I will be right here at defending the bank, baby.
Yes! Come on out and defend the bank with David Garrard. Will you bring your teal towel to counteract the terrible yellow snot rags?
I've not purchased the teal towel. I'll have to find one.
Let's just find a little towel and chop it up. Maybe bring the whole beach towel. I don't know, man. I gotta imagine how many... How much teal do you have in your wardrobe?
I have quite a bit, actually.
I would think so,
yeah,
right?
Quite a bit.
Back when, any teal fedoras? any chance?
I don't have teal fedoras, but I have a black fedora with a teal feather in
it. A little accent. Where are we going to catch you on CBS 47 and Fox 30? Or I guess I should say, when will we see you next?
I'll be on tonight at 7 o'clock and Sunday mornings at, I believe it's 11 o'clock.
All right, there you go. Catch Dave. I saw you last week. Doing the fedora challenge. I guess Hicken was the previous
Hicken
week's
has
winner.
Been, man, he's been running away. Well, he hasn't really been running away. He's been winning each week by one or two games. So I got to get better.
That's all it takes, man. coming up today, we got XL Primetime just a few minutes away. After that, at 2 o'clock today, the web.com fantasy forecast. Frank Frangie and crew, take over at 3 o'clock. We've got Gus Bradley show with Jeff Loggeman and the head coach Gus Bradley today from 6 to 7 and Jaguars Thursday as well. JP Shadrick, Jeff Logman, Tony Baselli coming your way tonight on your flagship home for all things Jaguars, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Thanks to everybody who called in today and who shared their – I mean, there's just a ton of old throwbacks out there. Wish I had tickets for a bunch of you out there, the dedicated hardcore people that have a closet full of the Ryan Christopherson-type jerseys. God bless you, man. You're the fans that make this whole thing work for you. Again, the Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you today by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Asking fans, what drives you? Featuring Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, and Tom Bush Mini. Visit TomBush.com for more information the next time you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle. That does it for us. Dave, see you next week.
Absolutely.
And have a good time on CBS 47 at Fox 30. We'll look
Thank
for you,
you
there. Have a good time defending the bank. Go Jags. For Fat Tony, for David Garrard, for Lauren Brooks and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. This has been Jaguars Today. We'll talk to you tomorrow, 10 to noon, right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.